So what does cause it?
What causes it? The world causes it. This causes it. This causes it. This causes it. Information overload. All the electronics around you poisoning the airwaves.
And this is episode 26, Information Overload. We're going to be talking about, it's been 3 years now since we ran our first Objective Secured event. That was the Masters 40K 2015. Yep. So we're about to run our fourth one of those. And Emma had a thought that it might be interesting for everyone out there to hear some of the stuff we've learned over the last 3 years of events. We must have run, by my guess, something in the range of 50 tournaments in that time.
At least.
Something like that, once you factor in the two shows we've just had as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of stuff, and even from the last from show that we've only just finished. I've still got some things that I want to take away and see if we can do better next time as TOs.
I think the day that we decide that we know it all and we've stopped learning and, you know, we've got this, it's probably the day that we need to stop running events. There's always going to be things that we can learn, always ways that we can change and grow and evolve and make things better. So I think we're open to those changes and being aware of them. Today is just about sharing some of the reasons why we do some of the things, and I guess some of the potholes that we've fallen into and ways that we've pulled ourselves out.
We should also let you guys know that both Emma and I are on the tail end, hopefully tail end, of a really bad flu. So if we both sound
Michael's
a bit weird.
Had a virus. I've been dying of man flu.
Yep.
So he has actually been significantly more stoic than I have. It's not often that I will admit to that him doing better, but no, he did. So we both sound a bit gravelly and we've got disgusting coughs and...
Yeah, so the editing for this episode, if anything sounds a bit weird, that's why I've had to pause it.
That's actually because we do sound like that.
I've had to edit it.
It has been suggested that I have a voice for a particular kind of 1-900 number going on. So it's by one of the lovely gentlemen who came to show, shared that. So, yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, so we might as well talk. We've kind of got two events that we've got to cover off in the intro today. The first we'll do... briefly, and the second we'll do a little bit more thoroughly. So the first I'm going to talk about is the 40K Masters that I've already mentioned. This is the fourth one that we'll be running this year. It's happening in November.
Mm-hmm. 17th and 18th of November, South Perth Community Centre.
Yep, and the tickets are on the website now as well through PayPal. It's an event that kicked us off back in 2015, and it saw a significant turnout in terms of what we've been experiencing in WA in the couple of years prior, where we had, I think it was 60-something over that 2 day tournament. And then basically each year since then, it's hovered in the high 50s or low 60s since. And it's the only 2 day tournament that is run in Perth anymore for 40K. Almost all
that
of them.
That we know of. There's a potential that there could be some going on that we don't know
about.
Yeah,
that's true.
If that's true, please let us know.
As far as we're aware, though, it is the only 2 day one still run. Most of the events.
Oh, sorry, can I just interrupt again? It's oh no, actually, I was going to interrupt and say it's the only two day single player event, but RWATC is actually only one day.
Yeah,
we've been talking about making it 2 days, but it is actually only one. All right, I'll stop.
Okay,
keep going.
Yeah, so we'd normally do three or four games, or in some cases, five games in 1 day, and that's based off the feedback we got from attendees over the years, where getting 2 days away from family and other commitments is just difficult, but doing it once a year isn't so bad. So we still run Masters, three games each day, 2 days, six games, and it's a bigger points value. You get more time to play the rounds, and traditionally we also tend to have I'm going to get a perpetual trophy this year for it. We tend to get prizes, and we've had some sponsorship over the years as well. So there tends to be more of a specialness to the event than some of the other single one-dayers that we tend to run. Mm. The challenge this year has been a venue, which ironically has left us settled back in the original venue with a little bit of a gamble in place, which we can talk about when we get to the main topic. But at the end of the day, this will be the last one that runs in its same calendar year, or at least that's the plan at the moment. We're going to move the Masters events, which are traditionally the last event of the year, to basically be the first event of the next year. And that's just to basically fix our calendars a little bit and give ourselves a bit of space around different events. But it's also to take into account some of the situations that happen in and around the dates that we've traditionally run Masters. So the first year we did it was very late November and all the uni exams had finished. But since then, the November dates have just gotten more and more complex with school finishing and high school exams and the unis and all the rest of it. So we made a conscious effort to look at how that was impacting the event, and the discussion was had, and we think that moving it to January the following year is going to have a better impact for the community, where they've had Christmas, they've had all their family stuff, and they've probably got some new toys to play with, and there's no, apart from work obviously, there's no sort of uni stuff and high school stuff going on, so it just feels like it's an easier fit for people in January. And so hopefully 2019's Masters will actually run in January 2020. But other than that, we're going to move on and talk about Show, which was run the 22nd through 24th of September, officially. And you've heard us talk about this before. You've heard us talk about it on the live streams. But it's probably worth mentioning now.
Given that we're just sort of coming out of our... I'm not sure that we're fully recovered, but we're coming into our recovery process of... We've obviously had Show. We had a week with our kids, and now it's time to kind of get back into it and go over what's happened.
Yeah, so Emma and I sort of shared a whole bunch of the responsibilities, but on the day, I spent most of my time with the tournaments, and she spent most of her time upstairs and the front and, you know, the booths and that sort
doing
of stuff.
Doing everything else. Hmm.
So it's sort of been interesting, because I felt like we were better prepared this year. And certainly from running the tournament side of things, I didn't feel that was the case after or during the event. I feel like there was more that could have been done. And part of that's to do with taking on too much. But by and large, apart from running a little bit late, all the tournaments that we started, we finished, and we had prizes and we had awards for everyone. And we hosted the ANZTC concurrently with all the other events at the same time. So we ran, what did we decide? Was it 13 or 15 events over the course of those 3 days?
I believe it was 15.
So we did have a couple of TOs help us out with a couple of the events. So we had Dan running bolt action.
God, if you list them all, we're going to forget someone.
Probably. Rat running Blood Bowl. We had Matt with...
Matt Devereaux ran Dark Age. Matt Overton ran Malifaux.
I have to say a special thank you to Earl, because despite not being the TO, he still helped me run War Machine. We had Michael Harding from Games Workshop Joondalup running a couple of the narrative events for us.
He ran the AOS and the 40K narrative.
Yep.
See, this is why we should have... I don't have a list in front of me or anything. What did we run? 40K, you did them all.
Yep.
Bolt Action, Dan did. Age of Sigma, you did with... Obviously,
yep,
you talked about
and Michael
doing the other ones. War Machine... Oh, I can't think of Shadespire. We
that was
did.
Mine, yep.
I know we're going to have forgotten some, and that's terrible. I don't even have my phone here to do a quick Google. So if we forgot someone, we are so incredibly sorry.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because we really appreciate everything you did on the day.
Look, and a special thanks to Mike Sloan as well, who came along as our helper for 3 days of running around after different things. So... he wants us to basically support us and do more work with helping run events. So he came along for 3 days, and it was funny because I don't think he quite realised what he was getting himself in for, because it turned into...
That's right, neither did we.
No.
Not with having him help. We didn't realise what we were getting into running Show, which is kind of why this podcast is existing.
Yeah. But he ran around for 12 hours straight for 3 days, which was great. And yeah, we had all the events go off, and like I say, we ran late every day for one reason or another for different events. It was ATC on day one, it was War Machine on day two, and it was 40K Last Blood on day three that all ran late. The plan based on last year was always to finish around the 6 or 6.30 mark, get everyone out the door by 7 and then have an hour to reset. And each, well, the Saturday night and the Sunday night, we finished late both nights and basically threw our hands in the air and went, we're going home.
Mm.
But having said that, we had more helpers and we're better prepared on the Friday. And then on the Monday night, even though we did finish, oh, what time was it?
On Monday night, 7:45.
Yeah. We have to say special thanks to the guys from Outpost, the guys from Crags, to George and Warren, who we forgot for Gates of Antares as one of the TOs.
Yeah, I knew that there were more TOs.
And everyone else, the Toy Soldier Cartel, hang around. There were a whole bunch of volunteers who just hung around and helped us prepare for the pack up the next day, which meant that when we did leave at 8 o'clock, we were actually in a good position for the pack up on the following day. And we were so far ahead, in fact, that the next day we actually got a chance to go and get breakfast while we waited for the truck, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, because I pretty much didn't eat for 3 days, so it was nice to...
The bill I got for the bar tab, which was what we set up for us, was actually fairly small. It was like less than $100.
That was just your solos.
Oh, I think I ate one day.
Yeah, I didn't, but that's okay.
I got you food one day.
Yeah, I didn't eat it.
Yeah, well, I tried. So show came and went. We had a huge volume of people come through upstairs and play a whole bunch of role-playing games.
Yeah, I mean, Michael's mentioned some of the volunteers that we had. We can't mention all of them because there were just so many.
Yeah, and Micah in particular for the role-playing upstairs, who organised a slew of DMs to run a whole bunch of different games for many people.
There were some public volunteers, you know, like public faces.
Yeah.
And there were a whole heap of people who just pitched in and helped.
Yes.
So, you know, we just need to say thank you to all of them. And community, we're so incredibly lucky. I think that I'm going off on a tangent. It's very unlike me. I think with some of the gaming clubs, there are generally one or two people that do 90% of the work.
Yeah.
You know, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Whereas we are incredibly lucky that when we run events, and particularly with something of the size, shaping, scope of show, that so many people give up their time and come and make it happen. And so the community is able to experience this kind of event, because without those people pitching in and giving their time, we wouldn't be able to do it. And so the community would miss out. So I think we need to say a huge big thank you. And so does everybody else who got to experience that.
Oh, look, certainly from the first year to the second, the first year was really hard on both of us because we only had sort of one or two or three people turn up for their setup. Mm. And I think off the back of that, there were a lot of people that went, holy crap.
I think the videos of us throughout the weekend, as we got more and more run down and bedraggled and...
yeah, that probably helped.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a really good weekend and we hope everyone enjoyed themselves. And I have to say thank you to everyone who travelled. We had guys come from Malaysia. We had the ATC trip over. They were from the East Coast, from New Zealand as well. We also had Down Under Network turn up from Melbourne. We had a bunch of people travel over to be part of the event, which was great to see. And we even got Guy Haley from Black Library.
Well, he didn't travel over.
No, he didn't. Although there is talks for next year.
Modern technology.
Yeah, he got to Skype in on the tail end of the Monday and have a chat to us all, which was great. So we have to say thank you to him for grabbing some time out of his Monday morning to chat to us. But yeah, we are now looking at show 2019, which is a whole nother thing that we'll deal with, whether it's dealt with now or before, you know, maybe another few weeks.
Well, I've spent the morning on the phone trying to get things organised.
Well,
so
that's true.
I'm on it.
And our house is still a little bit like an event's exploded in it, but most of it's put away now. So if you do want any swag from show that you've seen in photos or you maybe didn't get here, we've still got a few of the carry bags left with the foam trays, and we've still got a few T-shirts and other bits and pieces. So if you're interested in anything from show, let us know. And we're working on a web store at the moment, actually. So Hopefully we can start giving people access to some of this stuff.
By working on a web store, what he means is that as he sits here clipping out his models for his new army, he's thought about what kind of plugin to use for a new web. No, I know you haven't even thought about what kind of. You've just thought we should get a plugin.
That's not true at all. I've actually done some research and reading to try and figure it out. Last thing before we do get into the topic is my new army, since I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about 40K.
Awesome.
No?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm doing it. So I have currently sat in front of me a whole bunch of Dark Elder. Now
this is the same whole bunch of Dark Elder that he's been talking about for the last how many months?
The difference is that it's mostly assembled now.
It's now all clipped. Well, is it all clipped off the sprue?
No.
Okay, no, it's not. But there's a lot more off the sprue, and some of it's assembled and even on bases.
Yeah, so I've got all...
Is that windscreen cracked?
No, it's got like a design etched on it.
All right, okay.
Although I am missing that, which is my little rant for this army. So, it's a witch cult, a Dark Elder witch cult, a Drakari witch cult, sorry. It's a hard habit to break.
Get it right, because I get picked up on that all the time.
My last Drakari army was all Carbolites, essentially. So this is sort of the second part of the faction. I've got a couple of converted succubus sat here. I've got 12 Reaver jet bikes all assembled and ready to go, with the riders looking something like really creepy because they're on their hands and knees on the workbench. I've got 15 witches all assembled and ready to go. I've got the 20 Hellion skyboards all built, and I've got 11 of the 20 riders built so far. Those models will be the death of me because they're just fiddly and annoying, and there's only so many ways you can put them together because they're all holding the weapons two-handed.
It'll be the death of you. What you don't know is that our youngest child knocked them all off the table and I had to get down and find every single piece.
Well, that explains where the other bit's gone then, doesn't it?
No, the other bit's attached to a lid that you lost.
I have not lost.
You blame that on her.
I've got a Venom sat here that's assembled, but I have no idea where the pilot's gone, and I always paint the pilot and leave the canopy clear, so... if anyone built a Venom out there that didn't put the crew, so the little pilot cockpit and the arms and the torso and the pilot in, and I know plenty of people out there do build them and just paint the canopies. If you do have the spare pilot lurking around in your bits box, let me know, because I'm missing mine now. So it'd be great if I could acquire one from someone in the community. As Emma said, it was blue tacked to the top of a spray paint can lid, and... I found a bunch of stuff in the prep to show that was knocked off the table, and I can't find that lid anywhere, and I'm 99% sure that's where the pilot is. But that's frustrating because I can't paint the damn thing without the pilot. Mm. So, but the reason this Dark Elder army is so interesting to me is I'm doing a mass kit bash across the whole army to turn them into Dark Harlequins. So all of the heads are being replaced on every single model with as many of the creepy Harlequin heads as I can possibly lay my hands on. Thankfully, I have multiple... with the Harlequin kit, you get so many spare heads and spare masks that I'm just going through my bits box and just replacing all the heads, which is kind of cool. So they're the Cult of Tattered Motley. So they're going to be a custom colour scheme. They're going to be bright yellow with black checks and designs on them. So they're still going to look... I'm going for that sort of dark carnival creepy clown motif, which is what I want from them. So... they're going to go alongside my Harlequins, and the Harlequin colour scheme that I have planned will tie them in. But they, I've replaced the gunner on the Venom, all of the heads on the Witches, all the Skyboards will have replaced heads as well. And then I've got some stencils to do some of some loose airbrushing with the diamond patterns, because I want it to look less neat. So the goal is to make it look like I'm going to weather the bikes, weather the skyboards, make them look a bit tattered and battle damaged, and then have this sort of half sprayed on checker pattern that they've kind of done as a tribute almost to wanting to be Harlequins. So I've got
so you're making tryhard Harlequins.
Yeah, pretty much. I've got two Forge World Reapers sat here in their bags waiting to be assembled, and I've got two Void Raven Bombers to be assembled. And I've still got a Beastmaster to build as well. And then the last part of the equation with the Beastmaster, though, is trying to get hold of the Razorwing Flocks. And at the moment, the cheapest way to buy them is actually to buy the Endless Spells from the Beasts of Chaos Age of Sigmar box. Because when you buy the Finecast Razorwing Flocks, I think they're $28 Australian for one base of 3 to 4 birds, which is just mind-blowing. when the Beasts of Chaos box, you get three flocks of birds that go on the 40 mil bases for 40, I think they're 48 or 52 Australian dollars. And you can get them cheaper online, obviously, as well. So at that point, for the price of, I think I worked it out, if I bought seven Razorwing flocks from Finecast, I could get the 12 I need in four boxes of the Endless Spells. Mm. However, you get two other spells in that box, which you could then on-sell for $5 or $10 each, mm. which means that you're essentially getting the unit at half price. It's still, sadly, like $120, $130, which I don't really want to spend.
Is this what you originally bought the Zombicide expansion yes. kit for?
Yes. So the Zombicide Murder of Crows was the original intent here, but because the army's hopefully going to come with us when we trek to Warhammer World in November, there's a very strict non-GW... model policy. Mm-hmm. So that just can't, if I want to take them into Warhammer World to play, then I can't do the Zombicide birds. So hence me now looking for alternatives. So if you bought the Endless Spells from the Beasts of Chaos and you don't need the birds, again, let me know.
Did you just want this podcast just so you can advertise for the bits that you want?
Yes, it works. Mm. Actually, and I do have to thank people who do get in touch and go, hey, I've got this one bit that you were looking for, and they organise to get it to me and we do a trade or whatever it is. It works, and I think that's what I really love about the community is we all do kind of, hey, I'm looking for this one obscure bit and someone has it, and then it comes back around when someone else says they need it. So, so there will be photos of this once it's all assembled and prepped for painting, because my intent is to paint it all in one pass simultaneously, which I don't normally do. But because
it's going to be interesting because we fly out on the 19th of November, and we have an event on the 17th and 18th. Yep. So when are you intending to paint this?
Well, the goal at the moment...
Because if you paint this in the fortnight prior to Masters, I'm going to divorce you. And if you try and paint it the day that we're flying out, it's not going to end well for you either. You might not make it to your 40th birthday at Warhammer World.
Well, at the moment, the plan is to have it mostly, if not all assembled, it should be 99% assembled by the time we hit the weekend coming.
I don't even know what day it is.
It's Wednesday.
All right.
So it should all be assembled by the weekend.
And which weekend?
This weekend. And then because it's all done, all the base layers are all done with airbrushing. So all the skyboards are all separate from the riders. All the Reaver jet bikes are separate from the riders. The same with the Reapers and the Void Ravens. I'm going to be able to hopefully essentially lay down the silver, let it dry, then do all the weathering, let it dry, then hit it with the hairspray and then let it dry, and then do the yellow and let it dry, and then scratch it back and let it dry, and just do the majority of the armor in what will essentially be 1 or 2 days of work, mm-hmm. which means then I just have to go back and re-black the pilots and, you know, do the little fiddly bits, and I reckon I can get this whole army painted in 3 to 4 weeks. Hmm. And we've got 6 weeks till... So that works. Yeah, that works. So, and then I've got to figure out how I'm going to get it there, because part of the reason I built the army was to try and get it into our objective secured carry case that we had at show. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I quickly realized that I needed to add some bigger, more expensive models to the army to bring up the points, which means that I'm not certain I'm going to be able to get it all in the one case. So I have to try and figure that out as well, particularly the Void Ravens, because they're quite large. But that's a problem for another day, which we can cover as we get closer, and as my work gets closer to being finished. We might have to do some video stuff and show you exactly how it's being packed as an exercise in how you can travel with a Dark Elder army internationally. Hmm. Anyway, we've rabbited on enough.
One of us has.
Says you. We'll be back in just a second with today's topic. So we're going to try and overload you with some TO information today. The point of which being, apart from clearing our own heads and talking about some of the stuff we've learned over the last 3 years, but also to give anyone who's thinking about running their own events an insight into some of the stuff they might need to consider, and trying to share some of the pitfalls that we've uncovered the hard way so that you don't potentially have to.
And I guess for the people who are not necessarily interested in TOing, but who attend some of our events, to again share with you why some of the why we do the things we do the way that we do them.
Yeah, I suppose behind the curtain, as it were. And we're more than happy to share that in person at events, but sometimes it's easier to get the message out in one big go.
Yeah, and also if you do want to ask us questions in events, if you could not wait till we're actually sat down doing any of the scoring point part, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got, now I will just say we're both not quite 100%. Michael goes into podcasts with the intent to just chat. I go in with
a list.
And normally I would have this list set out with, this makes logical sense, if this leads into this, this leads into this. Well, today I don't. Today I've just got a list of points to talk about. So I apologise if it seems a little bit here, there and everywhere. But I thought that one of the things that we could potentially start with, because it's something that came up for us during show, was picking dates and the importance of sharing information. And the reason that I think that it's important to share, to talk about this, is that what I noticed happened over show was we were running 3 days of events while we were doing that. And we shared that with as many different people as we possibly could. There was also an event that was run down in Albany. There was supposed to be an event that was going to run, so it was a 40K event that was going to run on the same day that we were running a 40K event at a local gaming store. And so,
and there was another convention as well that happened on the Saturday of show.
Yeah. So I think sometimes what can happen is that you can be a little insular and go, oh, I'm going to run this, but not actually check what else is happening and when else it's happening.
Yeah. So when we set our calendar at the start of the year, normally we have a conversation with the two primary clubs here in Perth to try and make sure that we're not sort of interfering and crossing over each other. There's no point in competing. We might as well try and support each other and make sure that everyone's getting the best out of the events rather than poaching players from different things for different reasons. In regards to the RARCON, which ran on the Saturday of show, we didn't even know it was happening. No. And they didn't realise we were happening.
Well, actually, so when I'd looked at it, the information that I'd been given was that RARCON was actually the weekend before.
Oh, it was, yes.
So we... yeah, we had thought that, no, that was all good. It was, everything was going to line up, wasn't going to be an issue. And then it turned out that wherever I'd got my information from was obviously incorrect.
Yeah, and we also had some miscommunication happen, which is why we saw one of the Good Games stores here running a 40K event on the same Saturday that we were at show, which they then quickly decided to move a fortnight later. Hmm. But yeah, certainly considering... what other events, not just gaming ones, but other things that are on that could impact attendance is certainly something to consider.
So we've been looking at dates for show for next year. And when we've looked at it, we're kind of under the assumption, and it is an assumption, that most of the gaming clubs that are around have most likely not set their dates for next year yet. However... big events like Comic-Con, Supernova, they have got their dates. So we've checked to make sure that they're not happening on the weekends that we're looking at, and, you know, actually making sure. And it's, so if we're running a 40K event, we don't just go, okay, well, no one else is running a 40K event, because we're really aware that some of the players that play 40K also play Age of Sigma, they also play Bolt Action, they also play Shadespire, they also play, as much as we talk about tabletop gaming being quite siloed, there are a number of players that play every single game they can get their hands on, and they can convince their partner that it's a good idea for them to buy into. And a lot of the Albany guys sort of spring to mind when I'm talking about that. So I think it's about really being aware of what else is happening in the state, or if not in the state, around you.
Yeah, anyone who's putting time and effort into running an event, there's just a little bit of courtesy and respect that needs to go into that, because you don't want to be, first of all, it hurts your own event if you're competing, and second of all, it gives you an opportunity to go to an event potentially. Mm-hmm. So,
and for TOs, we are more than happy to put your events on our website, in our calendar, so that I guess it's a way that we can have this one collective calendar where people can go and check out what's happening
in
whatever systems on whatever days.
Yeah, so the WA calendar, we've been doing our best to try and keep track of them, but it's certainly something we want to ramp up for 2019. So that if you are coming to WA for a visit, or if you're a local already, you can see what's happening where and when pretty quickly. So the sooner that those calendars are finalised, the sooner we can do that. But that's slightly off topic. So yeah, it is important.
It's on topic?
Well, kind of.
I thought it was on topic. Yeah, so that's, I guess, where my first point was looking at... Oh, yeah, other things. Try not to run your events as we did for our second Masters. Run a two-day event over Father's Day.
Yeah, Father's Day, Mother's Day.
Easter, Australia Day. Those are probably...
Christmas, New Year's.
Yeah. Grand Final Day is probably not the best day to run an event either.
Yep.
We ran show this year the week before Grand Final. I would say that it was probably not the best move that we've made.
Particularly since there was a game on one of those days. But the LVO that I went to in 2017 had it on Super Bowl weekend.
Hmm.
And sometimes that's just where the dates fall out.
And that's what we're looking at for next year for show. Because of the way that the public holiday falls, we would actually be looking at holding show on Grand Final weekend, which is why we are looking at changing the dates.
Yeah, because that doesn't seem like a sensible option.
No.
So yeah, first, considering dates, not just for your own convenience, but for what it means to the community at large, is probably an important thing to think about before you plan an event.
Mm. Then the intent of the event. I think that knowing what the intent of the event is really important. That's kind of a guiding step in what comes after that.
So by that you mean, is it a hobby event? Is it a competitive event? Is it an intro event? Is it a team event or any of those other sorts of things?
Yeah, and being really clear as TOs, I think we have to be really clear in what we are hoping to achieve with the event. And then I think something where we've fallen down is not clearly articulating that and what that can mean. So while we have a clear idea around what a hobby event means to us, I think perhaps we've not necessarily shared that well. And that's
okay.
Something that we're looking at, how we can clearly define that going forward. Yeah, so for example, when we did First Blood at the beginning of the year, when we say it's a hobby event, so a big percentage of the score is, you know, from those soft scores, what that can mean to some people is that I can just bring whatever army and it's going to be like a fun game. And so they're not expecting anyone to play competitively.
Mm.
So really, I think that going forward, we need to find out how we can really clearly define that.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, okay, I can live with that.
Hmm. So, which leads me into my next point. I think that the intent of the event really should affect how the players pack is written.
See, from a talking about the players pack specifically, a lot of the... So for the hobby events, as you just mentioned, the waiting for... So something like First Blood and Last Blood, for that matter, the total scores out of 125.
Mm-hmm.
25 points of that is your maximum sportsmanship or favourite opponent score, whatever you want to call that. And then 50 points of it is generalship and 50 points of it is hobby. Painting and conversions and display board and all that other sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As a player, when I go looking for a player's pack, that's something you look at or something
I
look at.
Something you look at, yeah.
It tells me immediately that, okay, there's an emphasis here on nice looking armies and, you know, being a decent human being and, you know, putting...
All of our events have an emphasis on being a decent human being.
But there's plenty. Not,
yeah.
But there's plenty of events that don't do sport scoring anymore.
No.
And we have a couple, but...
We still expect people to be good sports, even if they're not being scored on it.
So, but that to me is...
A disclaimer for the moment. Sorry, carry on.
That for me as a player tells me that that's the expectation of the event, though. It's very clear in my mind that that's what people are expecting. So, I think the players' pack is an important tool in telling players that stuff, but I don't think you need to spell out and say... Please don't bring your, I don't know, most ridiculous, stupid super combo army to this event because that's not what we're going for. Because if you're going to try and do that, you start hitting hurdles of what I consider to be over the top and crappy lists that you shouldn't bring to this event is different to what your expectation might be, which will be different to the next person's.
Having said that, there have been times when lists have come in and you've gone, you know, I really think that maybe you need to have a look at that list.
Yeah, I've done it a few times, particularly in the early days of running those events. The most recent one, Last Blood at show, I didn't. I had two emails from two different guys with the same list that we'd already talked about on one of the live streams, basically going, can I run this? It was 1,000 points and it was three units of three custodies, jet bikes, and a shield captain on a jet bike, and that's 970 points. And they've got 1,000 points to spend, so that lets them put some Miscordias around and maybe upgrade one of the Hurricane Bolters here and there, but, you know, it's almost a spot-on 1,000-point army. It's one detachment, it's an outrider, and the four command points you get is enough to make the shield captain really good, and you can give him a relic and all the other bits and pieces. So, both players I told the same thing to. I said, I'm not going to stop you bringing them, but the intent of the... I'd ask you to have a think about the intent of the event, and both players still brought that same list. Although there was a third army I saw there that was custodies that didn't. It was infantry and other bits and pieces. So I think the... If you're going to try and say no to bringing a certain type of list, then you have to be able to quantify it and explain it to everyone, not just... not just put it in the players' pack saying, you can't do this. Well, why can't I do this? And how does it affect other choices? And what does that change in the game? And it's just a really long, slippery slope where you start getting into comp documents and...
It's... And I'm not suggesting that we're doing that in case that's why you're talking about this. What I'm suggesting is that we need to be really clear around what we mean when we say this is a hobby-focused event. And we just need to put a little bit more time into actually defining that and then sharing that definition.
Fair enough.
And I think that a player's pack is a really good place to actually be able to share that with
people that have read them.
I also think, I'm just going to ignore that little thing. Having said that, I didn't read the player's pack for the last event either. So, except for the ones that I wrote. With the player's pack, I think that the player's pack is actually really important as a tool for a TO for transparency. And I think that that's really important because... As a player, it gives them the opportunity to know what they're going into.
Mm.
So by knowing what the missions are going to be, then people write their army lists a certain way. If things change on the day, then it leaves space for people to get upset.
Well, even just not publish. I've known plenty of events that just simply don't publish a player's pack to begin with. A mission pack to begin with. They just turn around and say, you're going to be playing four games.
Or even don't have that. So a player's pack that I saw recently was actually just the Facebook event, and it said, this date, this time, this much money, this bank account. That was it.
Yeah. You know, there's always going to be questions.
I did have a points level in there as well.
Well, the more complex game systems and... In terms of the way you write armies and build things, where you're not using, like, War Machine, for example, as an app, Malifaux has all the cards and all the rest of it. Things like Warhammer, Age of Sigmar, and 40K both require time to put our list together, and it's more labor intensive because you are dealing with micro points as opposed to, you know, you're not building a 50 point crew for Malifaux, you're building a 1500 point army for, you know, and you're paying for 3 points for this special weapon and 5 points for that one and all the rest of it. So It is more complex to build those armies. So the fact remains that if you don't give that even basic information on how many detachments they can use for 40K or how many war scrolls you're required to have for Age of Sigmar or, you know, any sort of limits that you need, then players are naturally going to ask those questions and then you potentially put them off by not giving them that information up front before they buy their ticket. And that flows onto missions, because if you don't tell players, you don't necessarily have to say to them, we're going to be playing these specific missions. If you want to keep it for the day, that's fine. But you should at least... I'll give you three live examples, actually. Two of them are from show. The first is for the Age of Sigmar competitive. In the players pack, it had, at the start of each round, we're going to be rolling a dice round one, these are the six missions you could play. Round two, these are the six. And round three, these are the six. We're going to roll at the start of each round.
Mm-hmm.
So the players had 18 missions that were listed,
mm-hmm.
and they knew they're only going to be playing three of them. And they knew roughly which was going to happen when. So it gave them at least some opportunity to go back and, first of all, read those missions and look at how they win those missions and what models and armies they need to potentially bring to play some of those missions. War Machine in the Steamroller pack does basically the same thing, where you don't know how many rounds you're playing until you get there, because there's an amount of rounds based on attendance. So we got four rounds at show, whereas last year we only got three. And the mission pack basically says, here are the six missions that we have. You'll be playing one of these and you can't double up. And so we just rolled at the start of each game.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do something similar for 40K by turning around and saying, okay, cool, this event is a Maelstrom event, so we're only going to be playing Maelstrom of War missions. Or this is an Eternal War event where we're only going to be playing Eternal War missions. Or this is an ITC event where we're going to be playing ITC missions. Or it's an ETC where we're only going to be playing ETC missions. And even if you're only playing three of the six of them, you at least give a player an indication of how they're going to be scoring points on the day so that they can build an army that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing your own custom narrative missions, completely fine. But realistically, those should be given to players early, because they tend to require a different type of army build. They're more complex. The way you score points is different. And players can feel ripped off if they get to a point where they get to a game and then it doesn't work the way that, you know, was made clear for them, or it needs to be changed because something happens that TO didn't quite consider. So I think giving players those missions in advance and then sticking to them regardless is really important. And the players pack's the place to do that sort of stuff.
Gives you that ability to kind of think out how you want the event to run and to set players' expectations.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you've set those expectations, it's around delivering an event that meets those expectations. And so in the players pack, it's a really good place to set the expectation of whether or not this is going to be a competitive event, or is this going to be kind of a so I do actually want to run some events that have some just quirky cool stuff, you know.
And narrative events are great for that.
Yeah. So, and but obviously we couldn't go out and go, okay, so Masters is coming, and by the way, I'm just going to sneak this in that we're using this, you know, this Maelstrom mission that does it, that is completely so far left of field that no one would have even thought about it, and I'm just going to spring this on you in our most competitive event that we run for the year.
Yeah,
have fun. Like, it's not the place. It's not the way to do that. You have to let people know in advance and be transparent with that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the so for this year we're using the six ETC missions that were run for the 2018 ETC event. They're not in the same order. I randomised them and put them in an interesting order for the 2 days. But we are playing all six of those missions. They're in the players pack. They're loaded in down under pairing, so you can see them straight away.
You're so cheated.
Why? It's the same thing we've done the last 3 years. Masters has always been ETC. And whether that changes to
ITC. Oh, ETC, sorry. Yeah. I thought you said ATC.
No.
I was like, that was already in there. You just cut and pasted.
Well, ATC is a cut and paste of ETC.
All right, well, fine then. You're back to cheating.
And whether we go to ITC in the future, who knows? The fact is that we're using, I suppose custom missions is the best way to describe it. But at the same time, they're well-established, like play-tested thoroughly and used at some of the biggest events in the world in terms of what players have to deal with, so that you can actually go and look them up online. You can go and find information about who played what and how and when and who at ECC this year. Tawny Keeper has a lot of that information on it. And it's not something out of left field that we've written ourselves.
So what else does the players pack enable us to do for our players? Obviously, it gives us the time schedule, which we endeavour...
Yeah, most of the time.
To stick to. Sorry, I thought you were going to cough then, so I stopped talking. So we have the player we have the schedule in there. We've got contact details in case people are, you know, lost or unwell. They can let us know. There's actually the venue details, so people can find the venue. What else is in there?
Well, there's the army building format, or the force building format, I should say, because it tells you, regardless of game system, how many points or whatever metric is used to make your army up.
Mm-hmm. Painting score sheets. Yeah, part of that.
Yep, the painting score sheet goes in there. Obviously, the event score sheet goes in there to tell you mm-hmm. how you're going to win the event. Mm-hmm. Any special FAQ mentions, you know, they're referenced as well to tell you where you need to go and find those, or make sure you're at least aware of those. We've had a couple of events where players haven't been aware of FAQs and then been disappointed on the day. And part of that, it's as a TO, like I put links in most of them to wherever I've got the latest FAQs from. And generally speaking, they're not hard to find these days.
No.
So
constantly popping up all over my Facebook.
Yeah, so we, you know, knowing which FAQs are in play, or which beta rules are in play, or which variant rules are in play is often something that should be found in the players' packs. What else? All the awards should be detailed.
Mm-hmm. Whether or not people can win more than one award, yep. That should be in there as well.
And their count and how they're counted back as well.
Yeah. So and again, it's all about the transparency for the TOs. So that if you're running an event, and we did have one event where, was it Tom ended up winning just about everything?
That was Masters, was it last year?
I think it might have been the one before that. But it was clearly written in the players pack that that could happen.
Yeah.
Oh no, it was the second year, I think, because we had it in there where there was the, was it the CP where it was under 30 and over 30 or something?
Yeah.
Anyway, so he ended up winning just a treasure trove of stuff.
Bits and pieces, yeah.
But it was clearly outlined. And so people then can't be upset that, well, one person's walking away with everything. But in the same fashion, you can't go, oh, well, Tom's going to get everything. Well, we need to make it so that we share this around a bit. If you're going to make it so that you can only win one prize, tell people in advance.
Yeah.
And let them know how you're going to do those countbacks, which you already said. Anything else that we cover?
I suppose it also has to, when I talk about scoring.
When judging happens? Judging?
That all goes in the schedule. Mm. In terms of scoring, not just how you score the missions, but whether you're playing ICC scoring, whether you're playing ETC scoring, and then how those scores are getting through to you for the judge. Are you using Best Coast pairings? Are you using Down Under pairings? Are you using
pen and paper?
An Excel spreadsheet with, slips of paper? How favourite armies are voted for? How sportsmanship's voted for? I mean, most of our players' packs end up between 7 and 10 pages, and I am still convinced to this day that less than a third of players actually read them up until the day when they need to know which mission they're playing.
Oh, no, they don't read them then. They come and ask me. So, which does bring us to the next point on software.
Yeah, so I know plenty of players to this day still run with Excel,
mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that for smaller events.
And that's certainly how we started.
Absolutely. That first event. Oh, no. We had WarScore was the first one we used.
Oh, we did. Yeah.
Which was
We definitely started the first event that we did together back in like 2002 was done with Excel.
Yes.
Bob wrote
the macros for it. Yeah. No. So there's a few different software suites on the market that are free. So WarScore is the one we started with. Free to download. It's a flash driven suite of software. It's pretty good once you get the hang of it. It's a little bit fiddly to get your sort of teeth into it and make it do what you want it to do. But by and large, it works pretty well. It does require players to hand in slips of paper.
It does. Which requires players remembering that I handed them a slip of paper.
Mm-hmm. Which is its downfall. It's got a lot of requirements. It's got a lot of points of failure, essentially.
You know, there's only one point of failure. The player.
Yeah, there's 60 of them in the room. There's 60 points of failure.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
It worked really well for a number of, for probably 2.5 years.
Yeah, we made it work.
2 years, 2.5 years. Hmm. And we then started playing about with Best Coast pairings, mm-hmm. which is app-driven. So there's a TO app and a player app,
mm-hmm.
and the players get their matchups through the app and score through the app, but they can't do any soft scoring through the app, which is
To do with the fact that it's an American app, and the way they play over there doesn't seem to be around that soft scoring.
Yeah, so the two flaws from our point of view are, or at least my point of view, I should say, first of all, the soft scoring. Mm-hmm. There's no functionality in there for players to score their opponent for sportsmanship or vote for favorite armies or anything like
painting.
That. There's also no functionality in there for a TO to puts paint scoring in easily. But more importantly than that is the what, because it is an app, I actually see there's a downside now. And that's primarily because the iOS version of the app is fine. It has been fine since I started using it. My first experience with it was LVO 2017 as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And the Apple devices work fine. Mm. The second that you step away from that onto Android, in my experience at least, as a TO and seeing other players using it as players, it becomes a basket case on Android. Because the hardware doesn't like it, or the software doesn't like it, or the operating system doesn't like it, or you've got this plugin installed for something that doesn't like, and you can't see this, and you can't see that, and you can't score this.
And then we had an issue where somebody actually managed to
put score in twice.
And then that then caused a massive issue for everyone, which was obviously not the player's fault. But so there's an issue with that software that had allowed that to happen.
And from our point of view, we were still at the end of the day, so we'd finish game 5 or 6, whatever it was. Then we'd have to go manually into the software, hit export data, and then hope that we got the email with all the data
fast enough
that we could then take all the soft scores that we'd been doing throughout the day and then sort the data to make sure that the names were in the same order, which they never were.
No.
You always had it sorting slightly differently,
and
then line it all up and get an overall score. And then,
which it doesn't sound like much, but it's about half an hour.
Yeah. Well, which event was it? Was it Masters last year or First Blood this year that we were using BCP and the export didn't work? And we had to manually transpose all of the data that was in Best Coast Pairings into Excel by hand. And it wasn't until after that that I got in touch with them and asked, and they said, oh, we've disabled that function because no one was using it.
We were using it.
And that was really frustrating for us. And I don't know whether they've reinstated it yet or not, and hopefully they have. But as a TO, that was really, like, that just killed us that day. That put us about 45 minutes behind. And then around that same time, Down Under Pairings was being spruced outside of its home state in Victoria here in Australia. And we were speaking to the creator, and he basically had been sort of trying to get people to try it out. And we gave it a shot, and it allowed us to not only do the game scoring, it showed the missions, it showed pictures and links and all sorts of stuff when the players started the round. It has a round timer built into it. They score the games, and then as a TO, you can go in there and see who has and hasn't scored. You can also turn on and off player voting so that they can vote for their favourite armies, do sportsmanship scoring, all that sort of stuff in the app.
Which means that you can actually see who has voted and who hasn't voted.
Yep.
So when I was doing the scoring manually, when we had the Best Coast Pairings, I had Excel spreadsheets that were color coded and there were lines and, you know, everything sort of married up. So I knew who had voted and who hadn't. I could then go around and find them and ask. But I know when you did it, you didn't have that same kind of system going. So it was like, I've got 60 players in the room and I've got 42 votes.
Yeah.
I'm missing 12. You put an announcement over, you can do that announcement 6 times and then people will go, oh, I didn't vote. I didn't hear you do an announcement.
Yeah.
Because people are so busy with their game, which is fair enough. So that's one of the things that we do like about the Down Under Pairings is that it does allow for them to do it themselves, plus also really easily show who has voted and who hasn't.
Yeah. And the final part, and I keep using the word app for Down Under Pairings. It's not an app.
Website.
It's a website.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a few people go, oh, why isn't it an app? And to the response to that, which I wasn't really sold on until we sort of got our teeth into it and started using it a lot, it's good that it's not an app because it works on any device that has a link to the internet and an internet browser.
Mm.
Whether it's Safari, whether it's Google Chrome, whether it's
it doesn't matter.
Whatever, you know, a Firefox, whatever you're using, you can get on the website, log yourself in, and do this stuff. And it means that the barrier of software and hardware is removed. And I've had a few people go, "Oh, is he going to make it into an app? Is he going to make it into an app?" And while I can't speak for him specifically, I don't think what I've heard. I don't think that'll happen for this very reason. The level of access starts to get really grainy, particularly once you start talking about non-iOS devices. At least with the iOSs, you can kind of, you know what you're getting yourself in for with Apple. As much as some people don't like the Apple devices, it's at least a consistent baseline to work on, whereas the Google devices and Android devices and there's so many different hardware and software variations that it's almost impossible to make sure the app works for everyone. And then you do have, like we've said, some random stuff that can happen that stops it working properly. But yeah, how are you going to score the game and make it as fast and easy for you as the TO and for the players is an important factor in planning an event.
Yeah, and so for us, I think it depends as well. For all of these things, I guess it depends on the size of the event that you're hoping to run. But if you're running a bigger event or you're planning to run multiple events, definitely look at some of the software that's out there and available, because
most of it's free as well.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's free and it has made our life so much easier. That last, and so I spoke earlier about when players often come up and talk to Mike and I, it's when we're sat down trying to enter the scores. And you know, when we were doing it with bits of paper back when we were using WarScore, you have to make sure, it sounds really silly, but you've got player number one on one side and player number two on the other side. Now, when you've got them in WarScore, you might have got player two above player one. So you have to make sure that you are actually putting player one.
Yeah, the right numbers against the right player. Right.
And when you've got four people who are trying to ask you questions and somebody else who's trying to look over your shoulder because they want to learn the software, and it can get, it's really difficult. And when you've got players who, you know, they're playing to, well, you're saying dice down and they're still playing and you're waiting for these results to come in so that you can get the next round started. And there's a lot of extra pressure and a lot of extra work. And to cut down on that stress and worry of, because I always go back and double check to make sure that everyone's score is against the right name. But when you've got, you know, sort of eight players coming in right at the last minute and you've got 60 people waiting for you to press, you know, matchups, you're trying to do things as fast as possible. Having software to take away all that stress and the extra work, it's worth it.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially because it's free.
Yeah.
The only downside is obviously you have to learn the software. So for Down Under pairings, I hadn't had much experience with it. I'd been exposed to it a little bit when we did our mixed doubles, but I really hadn't had enough exposure to it. And we'd sort of said beforehand, I need to go over it. I need to learn how to do this. And you'd gone, well, that's okay, because I'm going to be registering everyone and you're going to be doing the other things. So you don't need to have it, which was great until there were how many people lined up. And all of a sudden I was registering people for all of these different events going, okay, I need 10 seconds of your time for you to teach me how to use this software. Go. But it probably took 30 seconds, but that was all it took for you to kind of be able to walk me through.
To get through that part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Even setting up the events. To give credit to BCP, it's really easy to set up an event in Best Coast Pairings.
Mm-hmm.
The scoring side of it's a little bit fiddly. I had to make it do what I wanted it to do.
Yeah, which is about thinking outside the box as well.
Yeah. Down Under Pairings is a lot more complex to set an event up, but it does give you way more control over what players see. And
so much more flexibility with what you're able to score. And
well, there's also a wizard now built into it so that you can literally go to Manage Tournament, Tournament Wizard, and just literally go through the 10 steps, and it will... If you're using missions that are either ITC or ETC, like standard sort of stuff, it'll populate a lot of it for you. There's a lot of tick boxes you can fill in. And the core of the tournament can be set up really quickly. Mm. It's also, if you get in touch with the owner through the Contact Us tab, for a small fee, he'll do it for you.
And it is a really small fee.
And it's totally worth it. Particularly when you're putting 15 of them into a software suite for 3 days.
Mm.
But yeah, software is definitely something you need to think about.
Well, it's certainly something that's made our life easier anyway.
Yeah.
Another thing to think about when you're running an event is, are you going to have, who are you going to have as judge or adjudicator?
Yeah, it is important to have someone who is, I suppose, trusted, that you can leave to their own devices and make decisions on your behalf and be able to back those decisions. It's a funny one where I believe personally that anyone who is an experienced long-term gamer of one system, I think a lot of those skills are so transferable to other game systems that I'll use Age of Sigmar as an example, because I've only played a couple of games of Age of Sigmar so far.
Mm-hmm.
I would be confident and was confident enough to run an Age of Sigmar event, albeit for only a small amount of players in comparison. But I was confident enough to be the TO for that event for show because I felt that if people had a rules query, bringing that to me and asking the questions with the documents in hand, I'd be in a position to answer it. Mm-hmm. And I think that most games would fall into a similar sort of situation. I mean, obviously, there's some that are way more complicated, but I think as long as you've got someone who you can trust to be analytical and, you know, read and take both sides of information and be impartial to that, I don't see why an experienced gamer couldn't adjudicate for any game system.
So I couldn't adjudicate because I don't have enough knowledge and experience in the way that the rules are written and interpreted to be able to have the, you know, if I have the rules in front of me that say, when A happens, B can't happen, and A's happened and somebody's saying, well, can I do B? Well, obviously not. But a lot of the rules are open to interpretation, and I think that you do need to know, like, the background of how... So Age of Sigmar and 40K are written by the same company, so you're able to kind of still... You have knowledge of gaming in order to make those decisions.
Yeah.
But a couple of things that I think that players need to know is who the judge is.
Yep.
And so something to think about is that judge going to be playing? Because if they are, depending on how many players you have in the room, you then get to a point of going, well, is that fair on that the judge's opponents to have their game consistently interrupted with rules questions?
Yeah.
So that's something to think about. Something else to think about is how does that judge feel about having to make decisions and having to make calls? Because it's a difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, that's true. There were plenty of rules queries over the weekend at show, and there were a couple of cases where you just have to be, I suppose, a little bit cold to the players in question.
I don't think it's cold so much as you have to take... It's not about friendship. You have to take the personal connection out of it, and it has to be analytical.
Yeah. I mean...
It's a nicer way of saying cold.
But even then, you sort of get to a point where someone says, oh, the intent is this. Mm. And you're still left as a judge going, well...
The intent might be I might say this.
Yeah, I might agree with you on that. However, that's not what it actually says.
Yeah.
And as such, it has to be ruled this way. And I said it more times than I could count over the show weekend, in that with any of the judges' rulings I had to make, I always defaulted back to rules as written. Because as silly as that made some of the calls, it meant you could be consistent with how it was played.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than trying to interpret it, and as the situation changed slightly with different units interacting or different models interacting...
You have to change your interpretation based on the change in scenario.
Whereas if you just follow what it actually says, you can kind of... At least everyone knows what's going to happen. Mm. And it leads to less arguments, I feel, because at least that way you're going, well, this is what it actually says, so this is what we're actually doing. It's a little bit calculating in that regard, because you're left going, well, sorry, guys. Like, I might not necessarily agree with... you know, the rules as it actually is written, it's always the safest option. Mm-hmm. Because that way you can just be consistent with it for everyone.
Yeah. Anything else that needs to be covered under judges?
I think that there needs to be, I suppose, a number of judges per head, I suppose is the best way I can describe it. I don't think one judge for a 100-player tournament is viable. I think... you end up looking at it and going, how many people could I reasonably manage based on if it was just you doing the scoring and you're not playing? And I think the answer to that question is always going to vary depending on the crew and that you've actually got playing at the event and how experienced they are. Realistically, I think you can probably run something between 40 and 60 players solo. As long as you are really experienced at the game,
mm-hmm.
You could probably afford to run it solo 40, 50, maybe 60 players. The second you tip over that, you just can't be everywhere at once.
Which is what we definitely learned at show.
Yes, that was certainly something that I felt very keenly all 3 days at show. Not so much day three, but certainly day one and overwhelmingly day two. I think that between having yourself stretched too thin across the day with too many people wanting your time, even if it is only a fraction of, you know, a couple of minutes, you just don't have the headspace for it. Mm. So if you're going to run a 150 player event, you want you and two others, and it needs to be something that everyone understands how to rule things, so that everyone's on the same page, so that everyone's getting the same answer. And if there is something weird, then you need to have the time built into the round, in the gaps, to go, okay, cool, I just had this happen, guys, and have your other two judges there and go, here's how I ruled it. These are the players that it affects at the moment, because they're the ones who are using that rule mm-hmm. in the room. And then they need to take the time to go and speak to each of those players and go, hey, if X happens, then this is how it's being ruled.
Mm.
Or at least be aware of it, so that when it does get asked again later in the event, that all the judges are saying the same thing. Because if you're not singing from the same hymn book, then you get upset players.
Yeah.
Because one player will go, well, that was ruled this way against me. And then another player will go, well, no, I had it ruled for me.
Yeah. And the thing is that that conversation doesn't happen at the event.
No.
That conversation happens 3 days after later. The event, which then leads to people feeling upset about, you know, about their experience. So, yeah, definitely. Advertising is probably my last point.
I mean, Facebook and social media in general is a gold mine in terms of advertising your event.
Yeah, one of my biggest lessons has been that while we feel like, oh my goodness, I can't post this again, I've posted it so many times, people are going to must be sick of seeing it. There are people who have not seen it. So last year, just prior to show, I was posting something about it and had somebody really violently have a go at me because how can you be doing this and you're telling us about it 1 week before? Well, actually, I've been advertising this for a year, and if you search my name in the group, you can see that there's probably 50 posts where I've talked about all this. You've only seen it 1 week before.
Yeah.
And then similarly, which happened this year and last year, this just happened last weekend at show. How did I not hear about it? So we had advertisements on the radio. We did letterbox drops. We had flyers in as many local gaming stores that we could find. We talked to as many of the local gaming clubs as we possibly could. We've advertised it through,
The online newspaper type stuff. We had a newspaper article last year. We had paid social media happening as well.
Yeah. The weekend notes type things that we paid for. We had, the actual companies that produce the games included promotion about it in their newsletters and their online calendars. So we did so much, and yet still we had people going, oh, I've never even heard of it. I didn't know about that. So think that when you're running an event and you only tell one group once, you're just not going to hit the numbers.
Yeah. You certainly, reputation plays a big part in it as well. And as events get more well known in the community, then obviously you'll have more attendance.
Yeah.
But you need to start somewhere.
But for us, we really struggle with any of this because we're not really very good at promoting ourselves or promoting what we do. Like, we kind of just think, oh, it feels really big-headed if we...
Mm.
And I don't want to push it, and I don't want people to think that I'm pushy. And so it's really... I think we both find it really hard to actually tell people about what we're doing.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, selling someone else's product in sales is easy.
Yeah.
Because it's not yours. You have no say in what that product is, so you sell it the best you can.
Which is really silly because we're both really passionate about this and we both want people to know about it and want people to come, and yet we're afraid to tell them.
Mm.
So learn from our mistake.
That's true.
Tell people.
the advertising side of things, I think it's important that you don't... I mean, going into the same Facebook group every day and posting about it is probably not worth it. You are going to upset people at some point.
Sure, you'll be kicked out quite quickly.
I think we ended up with, sort of every second or third week. Sometimes it was once a week, depending on what was going on and what we were announcing and how relevant it was to the group as well. But I don't see any harm in sharing it into the appropriate groups. And if you're not sure, have a chat to the admins. Most of those groups, if you go to them and say, hey, I'm running this event, can you do this? Or can they put it out for you? Most of them will be accommodating and do that for you. Certainly in our experience anyway. So yeah, it is important though to get out there and into as many contact points as you can to make sure that you're talking to all the, your potential attendees, because you know, you want to make sure that the event is as successful as you can. Although, speaking of that, I'd also be acknowledging what your limit is.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be at a point, and there's been a number of these happen fairly publicly around the world for these big events where they sell all of these tickets and then a week before go, oh crap, how do I have the terrain for this? And you essentially oversell your ticketing, which means that you can't accommodate what you've actually sold for. So knowing exactly what your limits are in terms of the logistics on tables and terrain and how you're going to get it to wherever you need it to be, and you know, whether you've got volunteers to help you set up or how long it's going to take you to set it up by yourself. Knowing all of that information, you can then go, okay, cool, I can accommodate 30 players, 40 players, 60 players, 100 players, whatever that number is,
also,
based on the resources you have. And that way you're not going to be freaking out and stressed out, you know, a week before the event when you realise, oh, hang on, I'm 30 tables short.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to say. Often what happens is if you kind of, well, I always think, well, that's okay because we've got 6 weeks between now and Masters. So if we need more terrain, we've got time between now and Masters to be able to build that terrain. What actually happens is between now and Masters, you'll get 10% of players actually buying their tickets kind of as soon as tickets are announced or available. Then you're going to get probably 60% of them will buy them between 2 weeks and 1 week out. And the other 30% are the ones that absolutely drive me insane with worry because they buy their tickets in the final hours before you close off ticket sales.
Certainly. And show's a great example of that, where we spend months agonizing over ticket sales. And then in the final 4 weeks.
Final 48 hours.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the last 2 weeks, we went from, you know, 10 to 15 tickets a day. All of a sudden, it was 35 tickets a day, 40 tickets a day.
60, 70.
And, you know, we just watched that happen in the final few weeks, which is great to see the tickets selling, but it's also really painful as the organizer because you've got bills to pay long before then.
Just kind of going, is this going to be a success?
Yeah.
And which I didn't have on my list, but I know that is something that I think is really important, so I'm just going to add it in, is around pre-selling tickets.
I definitely think you should be pre-selling them and trying to avoid, wherever possible, people paying on the day.
Yeah. And the reason that we think that is because when people purchase tickets on the day, they don't come.
Mm.
Well, you know, a percentage of them are not going to come. So if you have organized terrain for 30 players, which has meant that you've had to go out and buy, build, paint another 5 tables worth of terrain.
Even just having to go and organise a trailer or a big car or a van to go and borrow it from someone.
Yeah.
There's still costs involved in that, even if they're intangible ones.
Yeah. It's time and energy and that kind of thing.
And whatever favours you called in to get those things or paid for them.
Yeah, to then get there and find out that, well, those 10 players didn't actually turn up. So I've now got 20 players coming instead of 30. I'm not going to break even on my venue. And I've got these extra 5 tables of terrain that I didn't need.
Yeah.
And I've spent time putting them out. Because everything takes time.
Absolutely.
You know, just putting out one table of terrain can take, well, when I do it, it takes about 3, 4, 5 minutes. When some of the gamers do it, it can take 15.
It's certainly knowing what your costs are going to be has to factor into your ticket sales, and pre-selling gives you some surety and some security in that.
Hmm.
And that also comes back to how you price your tickets as well, because understanding what your costs are, as lovely as it would be to just go, oh, everyone can pay $10 for an event, you just can't do it. Particularly, there are places which can afford to do that because they have an ongoing cost associated. It's normally local gaming stores that, you know, or games workshops where they don't, you know, there's a nominal fee involved. If you're running them privately or for a club, then you've got hall hire, you've got insurance, you've got so many other little costs that no one ever sees or thinks about. And, you walk away from an event going, oh, you know, they took $2,000 in ticket sales, not thinking that the fact that it cost you $1,200 for the venue and it cost you $150 for insurance and $150 for this, and the prizes cost $500 and medals cost $150 and all these other costs. And all of a sudden it's, you know, you're looking to break even. You're not looking to make $2,000 on ticket sales. I think there'd be very few events in the world that would actually be a decent moneymaker. And I'm talking about the big events, like the, you know, your LVOs and London GTs and your ETCs. But even then, I think the costs involved to get those events off the ground would be significant. So, yeah, look, advertising and ticket sales and pricing are all sort of intertwined, and it's important that you understand what each of those means and how it's going to impact your event, and then treat each of them accordingly. Anyway, we've gone a little bit long on this episode, so we're going to take a quick break.
So I like us to be long-winded.
We hope you've enjoyed that little insight into a TO's world. And if you've got any other questions about it, you're more than welcome to get in touch. And if we can answer them, we will. We might even do another one of these in the future, delving a little bit deeper into some of these topics. But until then, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back to wrap up the episode. Okay, well, we're done for another episode. It's ended up being a longer one than I thought it would be, and even with the edits that I'll have to do to cut out the coughing and the spluttering and whatnot between the two of us.
And I still had another however many points I could have covered. So, there you go.
Look, it's we try and stick to an hour, and we always end up around an hour. It's always over, though.
Oh, we're long-winded.
Something like that. So, between now and the next podcast, what have we got? Not much, actually. It's going to be some personal hobby for me to try and get some photos of these Dracari up and start some more planning for show.
Yeah. I've got 6,000 photos from show 2018 that I need to edit, and I don't know how many blog posts that I need to write. So, yeah.
I'm going to write some blog posts about this army.
Awesome.
Only because I still can't process what show was or is for 2018.
It's funny because I had so many people come up to me over the weekend going, "Oh, you know, how's it going? Is it all, you know, is it all going well?" And I honestly have no idea.
Mm.
I know that a lot of people came.
And they all left.
Yeah, that's true. They did all leave.
We had one guy lose a carry case on day one.
Day
one, I think it was. We found it though, so that was good. He'd put it down somewhere and then someone had moved it for him. And we had lots of little weird moments like that all through 3 days. But nothing like untoward. It was just...
We were just really busy.
Yeah, lots of little things all through the days. I mean, we were doing what were essentially 14 or 15 hour days. We were at the venue by 6 and we were leaving at 8 o'clock.
Well, if you count going out and, you know, networking with all of the players and whatnot, then you could count it as 20-hour days.
Well, that's true, because we, on the Saturday night...
I'm sure that eating and drinking counts as hard work, right?
Well, on the Saturday night, we went out to dinner with a bunch of the ATC players.
Okay, this is an inappropriate story to share, but I'm just going to anyway. So we went out to dinner and we're eating dinner in what's essentially a laneway that was nowhere near big enough for the number of people that we had eating dinner. I have never in my life experienced grown men fighting over Brussels sprouts.
Which team were those?
All of them.
Really?
They had these fried Brussels sprouts that were just, actually they were delicious. But there was one point where one of the players was like, grabbing the Brussels sprouts off somebody else, and I sat there thinking to myself, oh my goodness, look at the amount of beer that is being consumed and the Brussels sprouts. Thank goodness we are not sharing a dormitory with this man. So that Airbnb must have been beautiful.
Yeah. And then we had the situation where one of the guys wasn't allowed into one of the night spots we were at on the Saturday night for his ponytail, despite the fact he was stood there in tracksuit pants and runners. He had to put his hair up in a man bun to be allowed in, which I just found absolutely ridiculous.
You were in sandals, weren't you?
No, I was in I was in my trainers.
But shorts.
No, I had jeans on.
Oh, that is right, yeah.
So, yeah, but he was the one who got pulled up because he had a ponytail, which was just bizarre. Sunday night was more quiet. We still tried to go out, and by the time we got out, everyone had had enough and we're all going out somewhere else, so we called it. And then Monday night we were out again because the Queensland team had hung around to play the singles on day three. Mm-hmm. And their flight wasn't until like 11 o'clock or something like that. Yeah. So we chucked all their bags in the back of our car and met them out for dinner, had dinner with them.
They crashed their dinner.
Yep. And that was very nice of the boys. So thank you very much for having us along for dinner that night. And then we were still at the venue the next day for 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We were gone by about 11:30, 12 o'clock.
Probably 12 o'clock, yeah.
And we were all set and done by about 2:30. Quarter to three?
Well, we would have been all set and done by 2:30 if there hadn't been a slight mishap with one of the boxes of terrain, and then we ended up having to do another 3 hours looking for it.
But yeah, but by, at least by that stage, though, I mean,
the heavy lifting was over. And
yeah, the year prior, yeah. We were still unloading at like 5 o'clock at night, and then we still had to take the truck and drop it back off. And we
made it back there with like 5 minutes to spare.
Before they charged us for another night, yeah. But yeah, those 5 days would have been, what, between 14 and 20 hours each day.
I worked out that we did about 80 hours over the 5 days.
I would have been more than that, I would have thought, but
yeah.
Yeah, so I certainly feel more recovered from it now. I mean, you slept the next day afterwards.
Yes, I did.
And there's been very little effort exerted in the following week or so after that, because between us getting sick and school holidays, it's been kind of quiet. We've kept a low-key social media profile, and yeah, it's been a little bit of a relaxing time.
We're about to ramp it all back up and get going again. As we need to wrap up this year. We haven't really taken time to reflect on what went well and what didn't go well and celebrate the fact that we made it. We really need to do that. But, you know, we do need to make sure that we contact all the sponsors and let them know how it went, which I guess is one of the things that I did have down on the list, that if you do have sponsors, then it's always a good idea to follow up and let them know that, you know, the prizes are welcomed and players turned up and that kind of thing. So have that to do. And then, yeah, like I said, all the write-ups for the different days. Sadly, because I was everywhere all over the place and nowhere for any long period of time, I don't have the capacity to write proper write-ups for any of the events.
I'm going to try and do that.
I'm not, and in the nicest possible way, I'm not 100% sure that you've got capacity to do it either. Because when you're across 5 or 6 different events over the day, it's hard to really know what happened.
I suppose that's true. I've got a vague idea for some of them.
Yeah, well, I have too. People turned up, they played some games. This person won, this person came
handed
second.
Out prizes and they all buggered off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose that's true as well. But yeah, look, I think if you've got any stories to share about your games at show, whether it's in the free play area upstairs with the clubs, with the RPGs, I still strongly suggest anyone wants to go and have a good laugh, go and check out the Facebook page. There's a video there from day 2 or day 3 of an interactive role play sequence with a bunch of kids and 2 very enthusiastic DMs and my mother-in-law.
It was very unenthusiastic.
Yes, but it is I found it highly entertaining. Maybe that's just because of my relationship.
Think that's just because of you, yeah.
But that's definitely worth checking out on the Facebook page. I might even have to strip that off Facebook and put it on YouTube. And then maybe make sure some of her family see it. But
they've already seen it. but no, I will actually be going through and seeing what I can pull off Facebook and put together as, you know, sort of videos for the different events with some photos and the clips of the award ceremonies and that kind of thing as well.
So you mean I'm going to be doing all the video editing, surely?
Well, no, I did say that I was going to do it, but since actually all you've got in front of you is your own hobby to do, yeah, I think perhaps you
can. I haven't done any real my hobby in yonks. Like, seriously, ages. That face doesn't tell me that you would believe me.
It's not that I don't believe you, I just don't care.
Right, thanks very much.
Yeah.
On the upside, in between the breaks of recording, I'm down to 4 Hellions to build. These models just, I've had enough of them. I've got 4 to go.
On the downside, it's been so many hours since we recorded the actual topic. I've no idea what we talked about. And so trying to do an outro is literally just 5 minutes of us rambling about nothing.
You don't admit that. Jesus, yeah. What's wrong with you?
Transparency.
And on that note, we're going to call it a night. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you you'll hear from us, in a fortnight's time for episode 27. And in between now and then, we'll be live on Wednesday night next week, as we are every second Wednesday.
On Facebook.
Yes. And I'm exploring other avenues for the live stuff as well. I also have a few ideas to do some more video stuff that I want to start sort of ramping back up again, probably after the end of the year, once we're past Masters and a couple of other things.
Yeah,
so
I think between now and the end of the year, we'll hopefully sit down and we'll do some serious brainstorming about what OBSEC can bring you for 2019.
Yeah.
I do still have a plan that I am trying to work out how on earth I can make happen. So, you know, I guess show was at one point a plan that I was trying to work out how on earth we could make happen, and we've done that twice now, so who knows what 2019 could bring.
Oh, God. And on that note, we will catch you for the next episode.
Happy gaming.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.